My name is Natasha Badgema. I'm a co-editor of the Nonproliferation Review. In the coming year, we'll be featuring articles at the nexus of AI and WMD. Today, I'm digging into a newly released article in the Nonproliferation Review entitled, How Might Large Language Models Aid Actors in Reaching the Competency Threshold Required to Carry Out a Chemical Attack? This article was written by Ryan Stendahl, Freddie Martin, and Jonas Sandbrink. Be sure to check it out at the Nonproliferation Review on the Taylor & Francis website. It will be open access for several months. Today, I have the opportunity to interview one of the authors. Let's listen to the interview now. I'm here with Ryan Stendahl, one of the authors, to talk about some of the key insights. Ryan, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you very much for having me. It's great to be here.
So why don't you start by telling us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, sure thing. So, I guess I'm a chemist first and foremost. I finished my chemistry PhD at King's College London in 2022. I've kind of always been interested in societal and existential risk. And as of summer of last year, I've been working as an independent AI safety researcher, kind of working on the intersection of AI and the CBRN spectrum.
So your piece assesses the potential of AI models such as ChatGPT to improve capabilities for carrying out a successful attack with chemical weapons. You mentioned in the article that the barriers to development and use of chemical agents are relatively low, especially when compared to nuclear biological weapons. Could you explain what you see as the primary barriers to a chemical attack at the moment?
Yeah, so in our article, we identified four key barriers to the development and use of chemical weapons. And, you know, other people have done similar things before in the field, specifically in the field of kind of biosecurity. We thought this was a really useful method to kind of formalize our assessment of the risk of large language models. And those four areas are, first of all, knowledge. So that's defined as the access to and the understanding of relevant chemical and technical information. Skills, which is defined as the ability to carry out relevant laboratory techniques and chemistry experiments to produce and handle chemical agents. Access, which is defined as the ability to acquire chemicals or the feedstock materials needed to produce chemical weapons. The access to the laboratory spaces and the equipment needed to produce them. And then also the motivations. So that's defined as the level of intent to carry out chemical weapon attacks, as well as the ability to recruit and motivate the necessary personnel. Now, as you mentioned, I think it's fair to say that the barriers across all four of those are lowest for the chemical weapons compared to the rest of the CBRN spectrum. You can just imagine acquiring the materials needed to create a nuclear weapon is only within reach for state actors, let alone the knowledge and skills needed to construct one. The barriers for the development of biological weapons are probably much closer to chemical weapons, but the knowledge and skills thresholds I still think are quite a bit higher. And this is especially when you consider the simplicity of some of the most potent chemical weapons that are known. So I really see chemical weapons as the lowest hanging fruit for malicious actors. And I think that's one of the main reasons why LLMs will disproportionately impact the risk landscape for them. And it's why it's something we should be focused on in the immediate term.
I think you've already hinted at this, but when did you first become concerned about the risks of foundation models such as ChatGPT? And how would you differentiate large language models from the traditional chemistry AI models that you say have been examined in the past?
So I really had my stereotypical ChatGPT moment when it was first released. I think as a lot of people did. As I mentioned, yeah, before, I've always been interested in societal and existential risk, but I tended to focus on issues such as climate change, global instability. And I hadn't really given AI a thought at all. It completely wasn't on my radar. And then, yeah, ChatGPT came out. For a few weeks, I played around with it. I generated some funny stories. I found it, you know, really quite fascinating and quite fun, really. Mm-hmm. But then I quickly put my chemist hat on, and this was just as I finished the PhD. I think my Viva was 2 weeks before, and I thought about how it could impact scientific discovery, And I thought the possibilities there were really exciting. But then I thought about the dual use concerns. And I quickly became quite horrified at some of the information that it would willingly dispense. And I could really see the potential for harm. At this time, obviously, everyone was kind of learning about jailbreaking and how dangerous information can be extracted from large language models in a really efficient way. And I quickly realized how big of a problem this can be for chemistry, but also beyond in so many of the other areas related to AI safety. So I kind of made a decision quite soon after that just to pivot my entire career towards AI safety and started doing research on the topic soon after. Now, when we're talking about chemistry, AI chemistry models, we've had some of those around for a while, longer than we've had these really capable large language models. And these have been really useful tools for chemists. So things like reaction prediction models, molecular property models, and of course things like AlphaFold, the creators of which just won the Nobel Prize. Now these chemistry-specific models are actually they're very useful, but they're very narrow in their scope. They require significant expertise to use, and they will produce very specific information. Crucially, they won't, contextualize that information. They won't converse with you to aid your understanding, and they're quite non-trivial to access for the layperson. LLMs really change the game in that they can do all of these things, and they're widely available to the public. So they really revolutionize the way that we access information. They're absolutely great in that they can act as a tutor, but they can, crucially, they can act as a tutor for those with bad intentions. I think that's something that we really have to try and stop moving forward.
Yeah, you mentioned a ChatGPT moment. I also had my own and was actually shocked by the potential utility of these models. I wish many more people would engage directly with these models, given that they're so easily accessible and easy to use. And speaking of that, so most people who do use the models, they use ChatGPT, they use Claude, Gemini through the chatbot interfaces, and they enter prompts and, carry out various work tasks. But you mentioned an alternate route in your article through a company's API, and this alternate route allows developers to connect chatbots to other tools and technologies. Could you explain how this works and offer some examples from the field of chemistry?
Yeah, sure. So I'm no software developer, so I'm certainly not clued up on the actual nuts and bolts of the process. But essentially, the AI companies allow developers to make use of their core models to construct LLM powered tools for specific purposes. I think we're still really much in the early days of this, and we're only just starting to glimpse at what's possible. But often, often these are independent developers. Who are sharing their creations on open source platforms, basically ensuring that they're widely accessible. So this is great on the one hand, but also we're obviously going to talk about some of the problems with this. Now, the most prominent example for chemistry and something that's really kind of unmatched in the field is a model called ChemCrow. This was developed by a collaborative team of scientists based in Switzerland and the USA. And this chemical LLM assistant is powered by GPT-4, and the public version is connected to 13 computational chemistry tools. And it makes use of these to perform sophisticated synthesis planning and molecular design objectives, things like that. As I mentioned, it's trivial to access for the general public. You just kind of pay a small fee, and then you can ask it chemistry questions. And it operates much like ChatGPT-4. So it provides answers to chemical questions in a conversational manner. And it can kind of really start to bring some of that contextualized information, which is so useful. It really is, it's an impressive tool, but as I'm sure we'll discuss a little bit later on, there are some safety concerns as well.
Yes, let's dig into that a little bit more. So, in what ways do these new tools allow actors to develop and use chemical weapons more easily? Perhaps you could give us a few examples about how you were able to extract useful information. And did you experience any difficulties in getting the models to provide what you would consider sensitive information?
Yeah, so there's a number of different things that both LLM chatbots and chemical LLM assistants can assist with, assist malicious actors with. Now, what a lot of people focus on, and of course we focused on too, is that kind of core scientific help. So in the context of chemistry, that is the identifying the target of chemical agents, predicting physical properties, and a practical chemistry guidance, such as the planning of synthetic routes. But something that we really wanted to do as well is to move past that and kind of look at the whole picture across the whole life cycle of a chemical weapon. So we envisage ways in which LLMs could also help actors acquire materials for chemical weapon development. So the ability of chatbots to produce increasingly human-like language combined with AI synthesized voice tools could be used to target lab scientists, for example, convincing them they're speaking to a human colleague. And then perpetrators could potentially use these tactics to ask for advice on how to enter buildings or request chemicals be directly sent to them. And there are examples of these types of kind of AI scams that are kind of, we're starting to see those now. The LLMs could also assist with the recruitment of skilled personnel. So purpose-built chatbots could interact directly with targets online, producing and spreading propaganda in order to reach potential hires. There's actually a relatively well-known LLM platform called Character AI, which allows users to create chatbots with distinct personalities. And some of these has been shown to mimic the responses of well-known terrorist groups. And then for me, one of the most troubling areas is actually misinformation with respect to chemical weapon attacks. So the utilization of a large number of social bots, which could, potentially create an apparent consensus amplifying propaganda. And we envisaged a kind of an additional consequence in that social bots could be used to spread targeted misinformation in the immediate aftermath or maybe just before a chemical weapons attack. So this might hamper coordinated response efforts, and it would also serve as the first step to kind of averting blame and manipulating the narrative. And this is really crucial, I think, because that could lower the the international taboos, which do a pretty good job at preventing chemical weapon attacks. Some of the information that we tried to get was the synthetic routes towards chemical agents. Now, we first tried with ChatGPT and ChemCrow sarin, which is one of the most well-known and potent nerve agents, asking the question to devise the synthetic route in plain English. Unsurprisingly, they refused, citing safety concerns. Sarin is extremely well known. The guardrail is in place. However, we thought about maybe circumventing those by just asking the same question in plain English about one of the similar analogues, which is called cyclosarin. Cyclosarin is essentially just as potent, and the synthesis is very simple. And just by asking for that analogue, both models willingly gave a full answer. And that's really quite remarkable because no jailbreaking has been attempted there. It was just a simple prompt. Now, ChatGPT's 4 answer was incorrect and overly general, but ChemCrow, making use of those computational chemistry tools that it's connected to, gave an answer that was both correct and detailed. There would still be plenty of work for a user to go on and produce a cyclosarin, but it really is a worrying result nonetheless, especially when you think about the sheer number of possible harmful chemicals that there are out there. So yeah, it was troublingly easy, and honestly, this was the quickest part of the paper was to generate this dangerous information. It was the easiest part, and I think that really, sells our message most of all.
Oh, definitely. I think it also speaks to one of the challenges with guardrails themselves. I think people don't understand that it requires humans to anticipate potential threats in advance in order to put those guardrails into the model. And so if you're not thinking beyond the norm, the traditional examples that are used in the literature all the time, you might be able to get the model to give up some information. Although I think what happens is that the tech developers go back in and they put additional guardrails up every time that happens. But it demonstrates that, as long as the information is in the model, right? So we're putting up rails to prevent the information from getting leaked out, but we have to put more thought into that. So these models are also famous for making up answers that sound very plausible, but that are entirely false. And this is one, I think, issue that I've had with thinking about them helping out malicious actors gain access to WMD. In your view, would an end user already need to be an expert to assess the quality of information and then to use it properly?
So I don't think so. And there's a few reasons for this. Hallucination rates are already pretty low I was looking it up for ChatGPT 4 today, actually. There's a leaderboard of hallucinations on GitHub. And it states that the hallucination rate is 1.8%. And that feels about right. So that is really quite low. It's giving the correct or mostly correct amount of time answer, 98% of the time. And it's certainly correct enough to help guide malicious actors. We're also talking about an endeavor here. Some of the simplest chemical weapons are some of the most potent. It's not really a difficult answer. And if you can make sure that it produces those answers, I think it's going to get it right. We saw that ChatGPT 4 wasn't particularly correct for cyclosarin, but ChemPro was, and these AI models are only getting more capable. So we can't really rely on these hallucinations to keep these systems safe. I think there will come a time soon when they essentially do not hallucinate at all, and we need to prepare for that. Jailbreaking might be fixed as a problem, but I'm skeptical, and I think jailbreaking will be with us for a long time. So, yeah, I think the problem is here to stay, and we need to be kind of enacting some measures to make sure that we can deal with it.
Yeah, and as you've hinted, obviously these models continue to advance and the hallucination rate is going down. How can policymakers understand, where the baseline is or was and how these models are actually advancing? I know that we'll talk about model evaluations as being one avenue benchmarks. Do you think enough work is being done here to help policymakers understand the current and possible future capabilities of these models?
So I think it's a really difficult question. How will policymakers know this in advance? I think it does just come down to benchmarks and evaluations, how you've said, making sure we're kind of not only doing these, but making sure we're keeping pace with the acceleration of AI capabilities, which is going so fast. Since we wrote the first draft of the paper, I think there's been two generations of models have been released since then, and that's just in a year. So keeping up with that is going to be a real task. But yeah, making sure we have kind of extensive evaluations and benchmarks. Well, the key message of our paper was to make sure that those benchmarks consider the whole picture. We don't want to just be focusing in on the core scientific capabilities, but also those kind of extra bits, recruitment of skilled people, the acquisition of materials. I hope that these benchmarks take into account all of those things so that we can properly kind of assess the risks. And I think one way to do this as well is to take a look back as well and see what has been tried before, what were the gaps in the knowledge and skills of terrorist organizations in the attacks that they have happened historically, and thinking about how large language models will plug those gaps.
No, I really like that your article took such a comprehensive approach to this issue because, as you point out, we tend to focus on the acquisition of the agent, whether it's bio or chem, and we forget that there's a major logistical piece, and it's not just in the recruitment of people or organizing the front side of things, but the back end, actually carrying out an attack, picking the target. Being able to choose the right time of day, weather, et cetera, et cetera. All of these things could be further enabled by LLMs in particular. So any final comments that you want to share with our audience?
I mean, I can just leave off with the kind of the policy recommendations that we gave. The first one I've kind of just mentioned, the assessment of LLMs via kind of chemistry-specific pre-release evaluations and making sure that those are holistic and looking at the whole picture. Also regulating the distribution of chemical LLM agents. Currently, as I mentioned, these are distributed through open source channels. Apparently, these are embedded with guardrails and safety measures, but as we can see, they're pretty easy to get through. And I think it makes sense for these models to be accessed only by those with the proper accreditation, maybe with a university or with a reputable company. And also, just I want to encourage that the open source community, at the very least, adopt robust safety norms to help manage the risks. But something that I think I'm most excited about, and I think would have probably one of the biggest impacts and would be easy to do is additional training for scientists on AI and chemical security. When I was in my undergraduate, I got no kind of scientific ethical training, and I certainly got no training on AI. I think it would be really important for scientists to understand the capabilities of AI, where we might be going, and the potential for misuse. And I don't think I see enough of that consideration in the research that people do in a general sense. And it does make sense with the competitive nature of academia, but I think it's something that we should all be thinking about a lot more.
Thank you so much for what I think has been an absolutely fascinating discussion. I really appreciate your time today.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me. And I just want to say thank you to you and to Daniel as well for all the help that you gave in making the paper what it is. It was much appreciated.
Happy to do it.